My name is Mariana Nord. I'm a freshman at MSU. My hometown is Japan. I lived in a couple places in Japan, and I have lived in East Lansing before, and I spent a lot of time in planes and trains. And I'm 18 years old, and my major is pre-vet.
Okay, you said your name was Mari Nord.
Mari Nord, yeah.
How do you spell your last name?
N-O-R-D.
That sounds Scandinavian.
It's Norwegian.
Kan du snakke norsk?
No.
You don't speak any Norwegian?
No.
Does your father?
Yeah, he speaks a lot of languages.
Was he born in Norway?
Or? No, actually he was born in Michigan. He goes back to Norway, but he's...
Do you have relatives in Norway?
Yeah, supposedly.
What part of Norway?
They covered a lot. I know my grandma goes back to Oslo a lot. And I know, you know, small towns on the outskirts and stuff. Mm. So they came over here, switched their names a little bit, and then started.
And what is your mother? What ethnic?
She's from Japan. She's Kyoto. From Kyoto, Japan.
Well, that's quite a combination.
Yeah.
Japanese and Norwegian. Huh? Yeah, my wife is Norwegian.
Is she?
Yeah. Amundsen. You heard of Amundsen who went to the South Pole? Describe some of the places where you've lived.
Okay, well, I was born in Oregon, and my parents moved to East Lansing, so my dad worked at MSU for a while, and then he took sabbaticals over to Japan a lot, and they were at different universities over there, and then we'd come back here for a year or two, and then we'd go back over there, or he decided that he wanted to travel through Europe, so we'd spend about a year traveling through Europe, lecturing in different places. And we stopped in Hawaii a lot, because some of the universities had homes there, and we'd stay there for about 2 months or 3 months at a time. And then when I was in 7th grade to 10th grade, I stayed in Japan, and that was the longest period of time. I think I stayed in one place.
Did you go to an English-speaking school there?
Yeah, I went to an international school in Nagoya.
You didn't learn any Japanese?
No, I used to go to Japanese elementary schools, so I needed the American credit and the American diploma because I can't enter college over there.
Did you speak Japanese? Do you speak Japanese?
Yeah. It's about equal level.
So. As your English?
Yeah.
Now all you have to do is learn Norwegian.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're very familiar with Japanese culture then?
My mom was very, she's from traditional Kyoto. So, and she lived and grew up in Japan almost all her life. It's not like she was over here since a young age. She was there till she was about 24. And then she came over here to study in Texas. And then we have my mom has a lot of Japanese friends that, you know, she keeps in touch with over here. So, and we go back a lot in order to, you know, remember the culture. My dad thinks it was really important to know a lot of different cultures, so.
What was she doing in Texas? Studying what?
Studying business secretarial kind of job. I mean, she got a business degree, bachelor's degree, you know, but she was a secretary.
Did she have relatives over here?
No, she was kind of a, how do you call it, I don't know, rebellious kind of, or she just was willing to see the world, and so she just came over here against a lot of people's will. She became a Christian, and that was one of her main motives to come over here.
How did she happen to become a Christian? Was she influenced by a Christian sect in Japan?
I really don't know. She doesn't say that, you know, it was one thing or another. Her parents were pretty allowing. And she grew up during World War II, and Kyoto was very, how do you call it, under a lot of military surveillance and things, because it is, you know, a very big city and things.
It was bombed a lot during the war?
Actually, it wasn't, because it was, luckily there were some American soldiers and generals and people who had high, how do you call it, status that really liked Kyoto, because it was supposed to be the first place bombed with the atomic bomb, and they had enough influence to change the city because they said it was too historical and it wouldn't do any real good, you know, compared to the other places that were military.
Do you feel that your mother's been Americanized?
Not really, because my dad is, he really encourages, you know, the Japanese culture and things.
But I mean, so, she had this rebellious spirit which drove her away from Japan. Is that a
result wasn't
of necessarily, a real love of American culture?
I don't know if it was a love for the American culture as much as she saw some opportunity over here, you know. Things weren't exactly the best in Japan, you know, you couldn't get too far in life over there at that time. It was recovering from World War II, which was taking time. She doesn't say much why, you know, what it is that clicked her to come over here, but, you know, she was just willing to try something new. She just wanted something different. And so she decided to come over here, go to business school, see what it was like, you know.
Has her spirit or rebellious nature influenced you in any way?
She, you know, at times she's really strong, you know, and yet, but she's still got a lot of the Japanese tradition in her, in the sense that she thinks it's important to, you know, do good at whatever you can. I mean, in a strong sense of schooling is important, education is very important, which is strong over there in Japan too. It's very important. And I mean, she keeps a lot of the Japanese traditions of, you know, the culture. She influences us in that way. But she also thinks that, I think it's because of the Japanese in her that she came over here, because in Japan, they look out to other nations and they try to pick up a lot from other people, you know, and then make it so it works for them better. You know, it's not like they didn't like what they saw. It's, they liked it, so they picked it up, you know. And they do things like that. So I think my mom had that in her. You know, she wanted to see, you know, a better life out there, and she just, you know, worked at it to get it.
Well, you must have particular understanding of Japanese youth, what motivates them, and it must be common for you to make comparisons between their youth, their attitudes towards education, and what you encounter here as a freshman. Could you comment on that?
That's a hard one. It's so different, you know, just the whole lifestyle. Over in Japan, universities are somewhere to go after you've worked so hard in elementary and middle school and high school. I mean, you work so hard over there.
What do you mean
and
by working hard?
They just study extremely a lot. They spend hours and hours studying.
Can you describe a particular working day or an elementary school day in Japan?
Well, in elementary, it's hard. Okay, it sounds strange, but nowadays it's not as it used to be when I was going a little bit, but it's become that wherever you go into your nursery school, you're going to go into that level of elementary school, and that level of a middle school, and that level of a high school. And see, you have to take entrance exams to all levels.
To get into nursery school?
They do have tests, they do. It's not like, you know, written or anything, but they do have some kind of a tests. And it's a very, right now it is. Before it used to start at middle school, you know, but now it's becoming more younger and younger, you know.
Are you telling me that by the age of 10 or 12,
your life is almost
planned out? You're supposed to know what university you're going to get into, or
what universities you're aiming for, and those universities will influence your job extremely much. So,
that's a fascinating subject. We could talk 3 hours on that, because that really intrigues me.
Yeah.
And from what little reading I've done,
It's been changing a lot lately, and I mean, I used to really love Japan for what it was, but I mean, I have to be, you know, nowadays, for college level, I think America is much better than Japan is, you know, for level, because, like I said, you work so hard until you get into college, and once you're in college, you know, you've gotten into it. Not very many people ever get flunked out or get on probation for getting a low, you know, low grade point or something, because usually companies look at the universities. I mean, businesses don't just go to all universities. They have their choice of universities that they go to, and that's where they hire their people from. So once you're in that university, you do have already a good chance of becoming an employee. You know, it's all kind of paved out.
Well, describe how you felt. I mean, you were part of that school system.
I was at one point.
Did you resent having to work so hard? Did you want to have more fun?
I was there in the elementary level and, you know, some of the middle school. And see, I was privileged, I have to say that, because my dad worked at the university, so I was already entered into a fairly prestigious elementary school right off the bat. No exams, no nothing. And I had no, when I first went there, I was in nursery school, and I had no language ability whatsoever. I mean, you know, I was just fresh off the boat, you know, just walking in there, and that's where I learned my Japanese, just because I got stuck in school and I had to learn it, you know, just to get along with friends and things.
How did you do academically, competitively?
Nursery school, it was just nursery school. We came back here for a couple years, and then we went back when I was in second grade, I think, around there. And actually, I did really good in Japanese, the language of Japanese, because I had worked at it, you know, quite a bit, and I did quite a bit better on Japanese and math and everything. They teach you so much, and I mean, I can't say that, I can say now that what they taught me in second grade is still with me. You know, I mean, it's so in-depth with me that it's helped me further on. And the characters and the language ability that I learned in Japan when I was in second grade, I went back when I was much older, and I would write essays in Japanese, and I could still do fairly well, you know. So
that's amazing.
It was fun, yeah. I mean, not to say there weren't hard, you know, not to say it was all just one breeze, because, I mean, I'm a girl, so it's a little bit easier, too, because girls accept girls. But I know that for my brother, it's harder, because, you know, we were the first Americans there in the city, and so it was, and we weren't even like real Americans, you know. I mean, we were kind of half too on top of that, but
did they accept you as Japanese on site?
No, see, that's one of the things about the Japanese that are a little bit, you know, awkward sometimes, is that they're not used to individuals very much. They like to look at things in groups and as being a part of a group, you know, as being part of a united nation, sort of say. And when you're American, you know, you're really accepted and you're respected, but you're not an equal. You know, you're just a little different. So there's just no way you're going to be an equal, even though they respect you and they treat you nicely. So,
Well, I mean, you've had this incredible background compared to most Americans. Do you feel the difference? I mean, here you are. What dorm do you live in?
Actually, I live off campus already, because I'm already sophomore status.
Okay.
So
You've never lived on campus.
I lived in the summertime. I lived at Owen.
Owen.
I lived with my brother for a while, because my parents are still in Japan.
But you've had all of these experiences. You've traveled. Don't you feel a little bit beyond or above the mentality of some of the freshmen here?
No, because there's a lot of experiences that I never had that they've had.
Like?
That, well, just, you know, the everyday, I've never had long-term friends, you know. I mean, the longest time I've been in one place was, I think, 5 years, 4 years, you know, 5 years. And that was the longest time. That was, you know, that was like home. Almost. And but at the same time, because of I was going to international school, everybody around me isn't settled. They pick up and go, you know. So I can't say that, I sometimes I look and I say, it would have been nice if I just had somebody that I've known all my life, or, you know, somebody besides my parents and my, you know, family. And, you know, I see these people who are work at ballet all their lives, or, you know, they have these really nice talents. Really, you know, I get really envious of that.
So are you telling me that you feel you haven't had the real opportunity to develop a single talent?
To a degree, yeah. I could say that.
And you're pre-vet now.
Yeah, I am.
Why do you want to be a veterinarian? Why do you think you're qualified to be a vet? I mean, why do you think you have that talent?
Yeah, I've always liked animals, you know. It's something that I've always liked, and something that's always been around, no matter what country you go to. It's something that's always there. You know, people are always, they can always talk about animals somehow, you know, and it's something that doesn't always create some kind of a rigid barrier, you know, like some subjects are really taboo in some places and accepted in others, but when it comes to animals, you know, most people are pretty acceptant of conversations with animals. And I just wanted to, I wanted to be a vet because I wanted to work with extinct animals and travel and see other animals, you know.
Extinct animals or animals
on endangered species. Yeah, endangered species and that are on the verge, you know. I mean, I couldn't help when I was a little kid is follow the panda bears in China, you know. And they've always been kind of a big deal to me.
But you've described for me the romance of it. The romance of talking about animals, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
You talked about a special feeling you have for endangered species. Now, how about the highly technical side of being a veterinarian, the scientific side? Does that appeal to you? Can you talk about that?
I've never wanted to be a clinical veterinarian. I've never wanted to really be just in one place because I know that I probably couldn't handle it, you know, living in one place, just because up to now I never have. So I can, you know, I enjoyed it. Actually, I enjoy mechanical things a lot. I really get involved with the mechanical things of it, and I enjoy science, you know, and I thought it would get me a little bit more acceptable with other people if I had the vet degree when I wanted to talk about and help endangered species, you know.
How were your grades, how have they been in math and science in high school and in college?
They've been okay. I don't know they've been about 3.6s, 3.7s, as, you know, cumulative averages. I was doing good in Japan before I came back here, and I did good in sciences and math. See, that's another thing, is I guess maybe that's why I chose it, is because I had a really hard time with English. And I have a hard time with Japanese because I always tried to even both of them out. And so they've both kind of stayed at a lower level than people around me. I have very little English vocabulary in the general way. And even my Japanese vocabulary is limited, you know. And so I guess maybe that's why I went for the sciences, because it's something that's so standard to me. Everybody, you know, when you do science labs, whether your languages are conflicting, you still can, you know, talk it out and figure out things together. And same with math, you know, it's straightforward to me, whereas languages have always been hard. So
let me hop over to another subject. If you had your choice, would you rather hang out with a group of Japanese students or Americans? Which culture do you feel more at home with, or do you feel split?
I really feel split. I couldn't say that I would rather spend more time with one than the other, because I think I've been in a lot of situations where I've been with Japanese, and they knock on American styles, and I've been in a lot of foreign places where they knock down Japan, especially now with the trade and everything. And I get a lot, most of my friends that I really get along with here in East Lansing have been people who are from other countries too. I haven't met hardly any Asian Americans, but I have met a lot of African Americans and European Americans, you know, people who do visit their countries a lot and are going back and forth. People like that, we can relate better to each other than sometimes I can to somebody who doesn't go around as much, you know, travel as much.
Did you reach a point, or I suppose you did, where you could read Japanese newspapers comfortably?
I read magazines, you know, I mean, I could at one point read the newspaper before I left to come back here. I've been out of touch with it for 3 years trying to work on my English, and I've spent a lot of hours trying to work out my English reading. So you kind of put it off, and then you can read it and understand it, but you can't necessarily say it, because I can look at a character and know what it means, but I can't remember the way of saying it or something like that. But
well, when you look at your background, do you feel that you have an advantage in some ways over Americans?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it's an advantage or a disadvantage.
Think about it. Let's say I'm from Taylor, Michigan. Or I'm from Rives Junction, population 800. I grew up on a farm. And I came to Michigan State, and I've never been anywhere but on the expressway between Rives Junction and Michigan State, and I'm in school here. And all I can talk about is that. Now,
to me, that's
compare
fascinating.
Your background to that.
I can't help but think of that as fascinating. You know, when I always have been envious of somebody that's lived in one place, has family there, you know, that they can always go back if something goes wrong or something. And you know, I mean, I guess I think it's a lot of my father's influence while we were traveling, and you know, my mom's lifestyle that affected me more than the travels itself. You know, I mean, my father's way of pointing out how we should look at things rather than, you know, what it is we're looking at, but how we should perceive it and how we should accept it is, I think, influenced me towards a better. But I wouldn't say, you know, traveling has been the best thing. I don't know. I mean, I guess now I look back at it and I can't live in one place for very long. You know, it's something that I have a problem with. So in that sense, I'm unstable in that way, and I don't know if that's healthy or not.
What does your father do?
He's a professor in educational technology. And he was in the Naval Academy for a while, and so
for a while. He taught there, or he graduated?
He graduated from there. And he used to
Annapolis.
Yeah, Annapolis. And he used to every port that he went into, if they stayed there for a long time, he would enroll in their community college and things like that. You know, he's that kind of a person. And, you know, like, he took 3 years of his life just to study in Paris so he could learn the language and study there. And he's a traveling kind of person too. And whenever he had a lecture to do or somebody, you know, wanted him to someplace, he would always make sure kind of that the family was with him, you know, because he thought it was important to stay as a family. And so at the same time, we'd be, you know, hopping, skipping around with him. You know, if he had to go to Paris, we'd be in Paris with him, you know, and usually he'd do his lecture while, you know, my brother and I and my mom went out and saw the town or something.
It just suddenly struck me, this is the story of Madame Butterfly with a happy ending.
Oh.
And the naval officer marries the Japanese and raises a family and they're happy.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah. He sounds like you have a very unusual father.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. I respect him a lot.
I spent 2.5 years at the military academy at West Point.
So oh, West Point?
I can identify with the
discipline.
With the military life.
Yeah, extreme discipline, he said.
Yeah.
I don't know if you quit it because, did you quit or? Did
I resigned,
you,
yeah.
Resigned.
I couldn't take the system after a while. It was too oppressive for me.
Yeah. I mean, my dad got to a certain point, but he didn't, I mean, he could have stayed with them, but he chose not to.
How long did he stay in?
He was an officer of ship. I think he was there for about 5-6 years. He did it in order to pay for my other uncle's way through college, because you earn money while going to Annapolis. You know, you get paid, and so he would send money back home as one of his, you know, one of the more choices that he chose for Annapolis. And, you know, he always liked ships. And he got to a certain point of officer, and they wanted him to stay there. And he didn't quite like, you know, the system completely. So he decided to,
you know Jimmy Carter?
What?
Did you know Jimmy Carter? Jimmy
no.
Carter was a graduate of Annapolis.
Really?
Yeah.
I think he's something 56.
That's neither here nor there.
Right.
But you know what surprises me is that you don't apparently see the advantage of the kind of background you've had. Even though it wasn't comfortable on an emotional level all the time, because you would get settled and then you would be ripped away from that and have to go make new sets of friends some other place, even though that was painful. Still, you were getting this incredible education of seeing different countries, traveling, being influenced by a mother who was Japanese, a father who was enlightened and learning languages and traveling all over the world. It's got to count for something, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it did. I mean, I was really enthused when I first came into college. I really was, because I thought this is a place. Up till then, my dad was also in agreement that up till then it was kind of like what other people told me to learn, you know, and it was their way, their papers that they wanted done, you know, like English had to be in their style for, you know, a good grade, or everything seemed to be somewhat narrow-minded, you know, whereas I thought if I came to university, you know, the professors, because I saw my, you know, my dad's a professor, so I always equivalated him with other professors. And so I thought, well, you know, if I could get somebody like my dad to teach me in all kinds of subjects, I thought, you know, geez, I could learn a lot of other places too. So I was really enthusiastic when I first came in, and my first term was really good. I mean, I had resource ecology. I don't feel really bad, but I don't remember the professor's name, you know, but he was, you know, I loved the class. I really did. I mean, I liked going to the class. And then after a while, you know, to be a pre-vet, recently I'm having to take general eds. And that just puts a damper on me because they're general eds. You know, like, there's something that I have to do. Whereas in some of the social sciences and some of the humanities just aren't as interesting as I hoped for. And I'm getting some professors that I thought were kind of biased towards situations, and so it's been putting a slight damper on it. And I'm thinking about taking a break from college, you know, for a while, and then coming back to finish it up.
What would you do in the break?
I talked to my parents the other day. I called them up and I said, I want to work on a cruise ship. I want to drive over to California, work on a cruise ship for a while, go back to Japan, visit with them. I haven't seen them for a long time. And spend some time over there just picking up again, you know, picking up my Japanese again. I do miss it a lot, Japan. They're living in the same place that we had lived, you know, for 5 years early. They've been continuously living there. So it is kind of a home.
Your parents' response?
They were pretty encouraging. They said, you've been in school a long time, so, because I've been doing straight terms, you know, I started spring, and I've been going summer, and I'm planning on continuing this summer, hopefully at KBS, you know, for a while, and then and then continue fall, and just take winter and spring off. So it's two terms, you know. They're pretty encouraging about it.
Do you feel a little bit afraid that if you leave college, you won't come back?
Yeah, I really do. Because I know what's out there. You know, I mean, to a degree, I know what's out there. I know what I can, there's so many things to do. And it's just endless. But at a university, I feel that the standard education is somewhat necessary too. You know, the basics that I can learn here are necessary to be able to make certain conversations with people out there, you know. There has to be some common level, you know, between other people and myself. So I thought, you know, university could do that. And some interests that I have really get fulfilled here. Like, they have a lot of Great Lakes classes, and, you know, the sciences here I think are interesting. So, I mean, and I'm interested and encouraged by that. But I get discouraged when I think of some of the physics and the general eds that I have to take, you know, just to take for being a pre-vet.
What would you do on the cruise ship?
I wanted to work on just anything. I wanted to see, I wanted to travel again, you know, I mean, and I have to pay my way. So I thought by working on a cruise ship, I really think that's a new way to travel for future people. I really think planes are going to be slowing down. So I think cruise ships are going to be hitting it up, and I thought it'd be kind of fun to know what it's like to work on one, just to
what
see.
What would you do?
You know, as a bartender or something like that. Just working as...
Would you wash dishes?
I probably would, you know, if I got the chance. You know, just to get on that ship. Whether it's a cruise ship or not, just to get on a ship, I might do that.
You have a love of the sea, huh?
I haven't been on ships too often. My dad sails, you know, so he took us sailing a lot. But I've never been on a big ship, but I thought it's something that I haven't done.
Part of you wants to drop out of college. Part of you wants to stay in college and continue with your pre-vet studies. Part of you wants to, well, that's dropping out of college, to work on a cruise ship. How objective are you? Is this youth moving in three different directions at once? Is it the sudden freedom you're experiencing? I mean, you have this freedom for the first time to study subjects more or less of your own choosing. You can control your own fate now in a way that you couldn't 3 or 4 years ago when you knew you had to go to X number more years of school. But now you're in college and you have this choice. You can drop out, you can continue. How objective are you being as you think all this through? Do you know what I'm asking?
To a degree, I think that, you know, I'll always be a student. I think that why I say that I want to leave and come back is the two things that are tugging at me is that most people that I have got, you know, some of the people that I'd gotten to know, like at Owen when I was going at the summer, people who had come here to go to college, I think actually it's a majority of people are going to do their 4 years or 5 years or do what they have to do to get into pre-vet and go to pre-vet, I mean, and go to vet school, graduate and get a job. And that's the goal, you know, and what kind of job you're going to get in the end and then get married seems like the general idea for most of my friends, you know. I mean, and have fun while you're in college, but your main goal is to get done and out, get a job, get married, you know, settle down. That one thing's tugging at me because my parents had never, ever raised me to do that. But I felt like most of my friends, when they went into college, they still kind of know that what they're going to do is graduate at some point and work a job. You know, that's pretty much the general idea behind, I think, going to universities nowadays. But my dad has always said to go to university is to learn. You know, and the more you learn, no matter if it helps you towards your graduation or if it doesn't, you've got the knowledge to back you up no matter where you go. So the diploma isn't what counts, you know, as much as what you've gotten out of it. So it's hard because sometimes I want to just do it the way most of my friends are doing it, just go through pre-vet, get my vet degree, get the job, and then I will feel like I'm with everybody, you know, caught up in that sense. But the majority of me wants to go off and be back to the way I was living before, but it's hard because I know that I'll fall behind from most of my friends. You know, they're going to be going on, getting jobs, getting married, where I might still be out, you know, traveling around, seeing new things. And I don't know, you know, I know which ones I'm used to, but I don't know which one would be better for me. It's a problem.
Well, how about all those people who went through that pattern of high school, college, selecting a major, picking a profession, jumping into a job upon graduation, getting married, having two kids 2 years later, and now working and probably have worked for 10, 15 years already in their vocation, that pattern. Do you think they're really happy?
I don't know, but I can see that as a family they seem to be. You know, as a whole family, like, I have friends, some friends that have, you know, parents that have followed that general pattern, and they know what they're doing, you know. They know where they're coming from, and they kind of know, in general, where they're going. They know that they want to have a good life for their kids. They seem to be happy to me. I guess, you know, that might be just the outside view. And I guess I can't help but whenever I drive along, you know, like Michigan highways, you see these farms. And I look over there and I say, you know, I bet they sent their son, you know, one of their sons off to college. He came back with all this agricultural knowledge, you know, and he's helping out at the old farm now. And I know that's like kind of narrow-minded of me because I'm thinking in the traditional way, because I never got to really know too many people, you know, that do live on farms or you know, had lifestyles like that. And I can't help but be envious of them seeming to know where they're coming from and going to. You know, and it just seems like they've got it together because they've got, you know, they're going to get married, they're going to find that, you know, they're going to have the kids, they're going to raise and then continue on, you know. But I know that I could probably never do that just because, you know, after living in one place for more than 2 years, I mean, you know, I get this certain uneasiness that says, you know, this is getting really humdrum. I can't, you know, it's so boring doing, you know, and I'm trying to constantly make new challenges, but seeing the same thing, you know, I mean, I have to leave, you know, like this winter break, I just had to go out, so I went out to see my brother in California, you know, I couldn't stay in one place for very long. And so I realized myself that it's unrealistic to try to stay in one place, even though that's something that I've always envied, you know. And now that I have the choice to do it, I can't do it, so.
Well, it seems that you've summed up the two things tugging in your life. On the one side is the desire to travel, to see the world, to continue exploring life in much the same way that your father and your mother, too. Your mother had a terrific sense of adventure, just coming over, becoming a Christian, studying in Texas. And I mean, that, what a sense of adventure she must have had. So both of your parents have this incredible sense of adventure. But on the other hand, you see something very stable in the person who grows up in the farm, goes back home to help his father out, and they live happily ever after in magnificent stability.
Yeah, I know, it's kind of, you know, narrow-minded of me to think that, but, you know, I can't help but, I know that everybody has their problems, you know? I mean, I don't really, I'm not saying that that's not true, but, you know, some of the people that I did meet over the summer, you know, I never, like, at points in my life, I really doubted that story that, you know, you come from a farm, you come to college, you work hard, you know, you go back, you help the, you know, you help your parents out. And I never, you know, I kind of believe that story, and I wanted to believe it. But there's points that I said, you know, just because of my background, I never thought anybody ever lived like that. You know, I thought everybody did what I did just because that's a mentality that, you know, I think about everybody takes out, you know, they should know what I know, you know, and, but I did meet some people that
Don't
were from farms and
stuff.
Don't you
realize you're the exception? That most people follow a very set pattern, but they don't have the opportunities you do, they don't travel that much. They are more than ever, but still most people haven't had one tenth of your experiences. You don't believe that though.
Yeah, I guess it's been hard because most of the people my dad's always encouraged me to meet, you know, all of his friends are people similar to himself. So like, you know, you said earlier that the group of friends you end up having, whether it's by choice or not, it just, you know, naturally comes as the people who have lived similar lives as yourself, you know? And that's what makes it hard, is that because they live similar lives as yourself, you don't know when you're going to see them next. You know, you can be great friends with them, and you just don't know when you're going to see them next.
What was the name of the city you lived in Japan?
One of the cities was Nagoya.
Nagoya.
Mm-hmm.
Well, think of the old lady selling fish in the fish market at Nagoya. This family had probably been there for...
I did make some very Japanese friends.
25 generations, and who would never consider anything but staying within that working class atmosphere, etc.
You know, but they're happy. They are. I mean, my mom has six sisters. And all six of them have stayed in Japan. And not all of them have, like you say, have gotten that small life thing, but most of them have. And they are happy, you know. My cousins are all getting married now. You know, some of them's got kids and stuff. And, you know, I mean, they always go home to my grandma. They always see her. And... you know, everybody's just great over there. That's what I really miss.
It's not just the farm boy in Michigan.
It's
the small town person.
Yeah.
In Japan.
Because I mean, I can't help but think it must be nice to be able to go home. You know. Just to know that they'll be there.
Isn't there a balance between these two worlds? Isn't there a compromise you can reach?
Hopefully, if I can myself, you know, just settle down with one person, maybe that would be the compromise like my dad chose. I think that was his compromise. I don't think, you know, just to make his own family be his base, because I don't think he's chosen his side of the family necessarily as a base at all. I think we are his base. And, most likely something similar is going to happen with me too, you know, and my brother, I'm sure, we'll find our own bases. You know, me and my brother get along really well. So in that sense, I think, as, you know, brother-sister relationship, we'll be each other's base for a long time. But my parents move a lot.
So your concept of a base depends upon relationships with people rather than a physical place in which to live.
I get kind of confused at that too, because, you know, everybody goes, when I'm here, they're going, I'm going to go home for the weekend, you know, or I'm going to, because, you know, a lot of people that go to state are from either Ann Arbor or places that are about 3 hours drive or, you know, around that area. And so It's a base of being, you know, the people that are there, but it's also, you know, you grew up in that house, you know that your stuff is still there, you know that there's a part of you that you left behind that you can always go back to, you know. So maybe it is somewhat physical, you know. I think my brothers might end up settling down, and that's nice for me. Because, I mean, you know, I want him to settle down because I'll know that he'll always be there, you know, so.
It's an older, younger brother?
Older brother, just 3 years older, but he quit college, too, for a while, and he's been working hard. See, he chose a weird, different road, too, you know.
What college was he in?
He was going to college in Japan for a while. It was an international college there. And he did some architect at LCC, you know, Lansing Community College. And then he's been working a lot. He decided to do work rather than study for a while. He wants to be an architect, and he wasn't sure what exactly he wanted to do, and instead of spending money for tuition, taking courses that he wasn't sure he wanted to take, he decided to work while he was younger and so he can do the physical work and then, you know, pick up, because he's he's extremely intelligent, you know, and he can pick up things that would take me much longer to do.
So, are you more gifted in languages?
I don't know. I mean, I've always looked up to him. He's just been, you know, the Mr., you know, high IQ and really intelligent in life. So he reads a lot English, and he knows so much vocabulary. You know, he's done great in math, too. So, I don't know. You know, I mean, I usually talk the language before he does. I'll be speaking it, and he won't be speaking it at all. But once he gets going, you know, he can, and he doesn't write very often, but he can read a lot and picks it up. And I think that's the difference there, is that he read a lot of books and novels in English, whereas I was outside talking to my friends, you know, in Japanese, and I used to have great fun, you know, learning the language in Japan. So I guess it's different interests. I don't know. I like those lecture halls, you know, where he's talking to you, you know what I mean? And he's teaching you, you know, and I don't know. It's just, I like that atmosphere a lot here. And I guess he didn't like that too much.
What's your opinion of the other freshmen here? Have you gotten along with them generally?
Yeah.
Do you have fun with them? Tell me some of your experiences with them.
Geez, I know the town better. See, everywhere I go, actually, sometimes I'm really shocked at some of the people who never go off campus once they're here. You know, all through their, they could live here for 2 years and they wouldn't know what's past Grand River, you know, and I can't imagine living like that, you know, just because if I come into a new town, you know, I remember, like, just going through every single building, you know, figuring out where's where, and just having to know, you know, what it's like out there, to just know the streets, just know how to get places. And it's fun because, I mean, you know, they're willing to, most of them are willing to, you know, try out something new, so I'll be like, you know, well, we can go over here, you know, or something like that. Sometimes I'd assume that they knew where some of these buildings were. And it's amazing to know that a lot of people don't know. I mean, some people who only have classes like in Bessie and Wells area, they'll only know that area. They won't know past natural resources or anything like that, you know. And it's kind of funny.
Well, as people to be with, to talk with, to share experiences with, to...
I don't really bring up my past that much at all.
What do they want to, I mean...
When we talk, we just talk. I listen to, you know, what they say, and we have conversations about, I don't know, you know, just school or what it is you want to, you know, we'll start doing some things together, you know, just going out and talking, eating lunch and things, and then after a certain time, you know, you start talking about what's here, what's now. You know, what's going on with your life now, not in your past. I don't really talk too much about what has happened to me and It is actually, because it's kind of discouraging, because once in a while I'll let it slip that, yeah, I was living in Japan before, or, you know, I was living with my brother before, and then they'll be all, you know.
They'll ask all the questions.
They'll ask the questions, and, you know, sometimes I just, to me, that's not important to me.
Are you uncomfortable talking about this with me?
I don't know, you know.
Parts of your past?
It's not necessarily uncomfortable just as much as, to me, it's, you know, what I've lived, and it's no excitement to me, so I like to hear what, you know, the other people have to say about their lives and things.
You don't know what you have until you hear what somebody else has experienced, do you?
Yeah, I mean, I've always appreciated what I've had, you know, and I've always loved it, but the way my dad brought us up is he said, you know, well, you've lived a certain life, you know, but there's still so much out there. You know, life is so big, it's unbelievably big, and, you know, there's so little time to get it all in, so I can't help but want to get more in, you know, and it's just, you know, you feel like it's never-ending information, and my friends, you know, like some of my friends here are just hysterically funny, you know, just, they're comedians, and even though it seems like, you know, you're not really getting in-depth or anything with them, but, you know, it's entertainment, and you learn about them and their personalities, and I like getting to know different people's personalities, and even though they might not have seen as much, sometimes they have, you know, their personalities are willing enough to learn new things, and I think that's the more important thing than it is to have seen everything, you know, it's the personality underneath it, how willing you are to accept other people for what they are.
Do you have a roommate now? Are you living with somebody?
I have two roommates, yeah. One's a senior, and one of them's from Nepal. Just moved from Nepal.
All right, here we are. We've got about 15 or 20 minutes. I'm going to give you a transcript, completely typed up transcript of this, which hopefully you will keep and haul out 10 years from now and look at and say, maybe I had something on the ball, or, hey, I said those crazy things. What would you like to, if you were going to sum up your philosophy, how would you do it?
I really hope that going to school, different colleges, will make me a well-rounded person. You know, I think to be well-rounded is probably one of my biggest goals. And I think that the university, you know, can help me. And this is a big university. It's more, you know, of an opportunity here than some other universities. Even though I am looking at other universities to transfer to for a while, I would really like to just come out of the institutions well-rounded, you know, knowing more, you know, just understanding a little bit more about life. Whether it means that I'll be rich or not, or, you know, if I can just help other people, I think I guess if I could just make, you know, this world a better place to live in, that's what I'd really like to come out here with. And I think being well-rounded would help, you know, being able to talk to other people.
You said earlier you were interested in working with animals which were on the endangered species list. I sense in you a desire to do something which will help save the world. Where does that come from? Have you ever thought about that?
Probably my dad's influence, you know, and my mom's. They're both think that the world can be a great place to live. It's just that, you know, with all this pollution and everything and so much bad sometimes that happens, it's sad how people hurt each other the way they do. And I guess maybe that's from traveling that has put the plus on it. From traveling is that through that I've been able to see what makes people upset in different countries, you know, what it is their values are and why sometimes people come from other places
and they think they can change the world, you know, like some people from America would go over and they think their way is the right way, even though it's not going to fit in to the country that they're trying to change, even though they have good intentions. I get really, you know, I think that's discouraging, that they go over there thinking that they got the right way, that they've got all the answers just because they seem to be a little bit more educated. You know, if they're so educated, they wouldn't be trying to change them, they'd just be trying to help them, you know. And I guess through traveling, that has put the plus on that side of it.
Can you give an example of that? You stated that very generally. Are you talking, for example, about what Americans have attempted to do in Japan, for example, or what?
To a degree, I see Japan as a nation going out trying to make technologically life easier for some people. I realize that they're not doing so well pollution-wise, but what Americans don't realize, too, is that up till now, recently it's been changing for the worse a little bit, but up till now, Japan has always recycled all their goods. They don't, small things add up. They don't burn, you know, plastics and things like that. Like, Americans just, like, you know, think they can dump it somewhere, whereas Japan's been such a small nation. They've had to do the best they can with the space they have. And they have had to, you know, like China's had to control their population and things. I mean, they've had to really take care of themselves. And when they go out, you know, like, they're coming over to the States and they're buying out companies. And they're basically taking over. But I think their philosophy for employees is a lot better than the way Americans have treated their employees. And if it's for the better, I don't see why we should fight it. A lot of people go, you know, it's terrible because, you know, all these other nations are coming into our country and taking over or something. But it's for the better, you know, in a lot of ways. Some of the things that they've been doing, not everything, but in a lot of ways, they've been doing it for the better. So, if they're doing it for the better, then I would think that everybody would be happier, because everybody, in the end, would be happier. So, I want, you know, things like that to keep on going on, instead of people fighting each other just because of, you know, nationalism and things like that. Because I don't think when most of the Japanese come over here, they come over here thinking they're better. They come over here thinking that they can learn something from America, and yet still keep some of their traditional ways because they think some of the ways that they do it here are wrong. You know, and that's completely acceptable to me, because Americans have gone over there. You know, a lot of military bases, I used to go to military bases all the time. You know, they take up so much land, these military bases, and it's so sad sometimes, because they think, America thinks they're helping all these other countries so much. They buy out this land, they take over this land, they build these houses with, you know, incredibly large backyards on the base, and, you know, so the captains and the officers can live nicely, and they've got these big spread of gymnasiums, you know. And here it is, right outside the fences, they've got these big mansions that Japanese have built so they can stack up, you know, because they've got such a large amount of people there, you know, they have to condense it, you know. And it's so ironic that where 50 people could be living, only one family lives, you know, on the bases. And so that kind of, like, bothers me when somebody says, you know, well, they know the answers to everything, when they haven't seen what their little solutions are doing, you know, what they equate out in a room, you know, that's, you know, 8-hour flight away from the place that they're trying to design this place for. It's unrealistic. They have to see it. They have to be there. They have to understand the people before they can decide what they're going to do to change them. I guess that does make me upset sometimes, you know, when I
see things. I've always thought the Japanese were much more used to living in crowded conditions, use space much more efficiently, and we're much more tolerant of one another living in close quarters. My father had a good Japanese friend, and he used to say that his name was Sato, could sit in a room and be reading or doing something, and he would be so quiet and still that you didn't know that he was there. Mm-hmm. He was so used to sharing a small space with others.
Yeah.
And he was able to create this privacy around himself, which made you think that he really wasn't intruding on your space.
Yeah, I think...
Is that right?
I think that's a big point, is that why Japan has been so successful compared to some of the other nations is that they're not as intimidated nor intimidating to others as some of... You come here, you know, you accidentally bump somebody, you know, you say you're sorry, but they're like, geez, why are you bumping into me, you know? I mean, or if somebody slips and falls, how many people go out and help this person, you know? They're like, I don't know what kind of person this is, I'm not going to help them, you know, kind of attitude. A lot of other places, whereas in Japan, people are more, because, like you said, it's a small place, they have learned to deal with people at close range, you know? They've learned to tolerate some of their differences, you know, and accept and just be more patient with each other and accept the other person's way for the way it is. You know, they're not going to change just because an old grandfather doesn't want to, you know, ride the bus because he has something against the, you know, bus system or something. They're not going to force him to do it. They're not going to say, well, you know, they just accept it, they let it go, and that's that. You know, here it seems like, you know, you push the person because you think it's right, you know, you're like, why don't they do it then? Because it's so right, you know, even though it's so right to one person's mind doesn't mean it's so right to the other person, you know. Like you said, I think it's just, in that sense, I wish that if you could just spread some of those, you know, ideas to other places, maybe people would be more tolerant and more accepting of each other, you know, it'd be a lot nicer place, you know. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of friends that are from South Africa, you know, and we talk about that too once in a while, you know, how the white supremacists and things like that, and I mean, it's even worse when it's racial, you know, because then you always lay back on the, you know, color scheme, but to me, because that's just, to me sometimes, you know, that's just the layback, you know. It's not the color scheme that matters, it's the personality clashes, you know. And you just try to make a group out of your color or something, you know, in your race.
What's your reaction to all of those things which are typically American university, and everything from the 70,000 people watching the football game to the sororities and the fraternities, the beer parties on Saturday night, the craziness in the dorms, the drinking, all of that?
You can't, I mean, they're fun, you know. I think they're great because at those times everybody does seem to have to get along, you know. And it's discouraging when at one of these parties there's an argument that breaks out, you know. I mean, you know, everybody's there to have fun. I don't see why people get so intimidated by one another. But, you know, you can't help but at those moments when a whole score of people come to watch a football game and encourage MSU on, you know, that's kind of, I think that's really neat, because whereas, you know, these people might not talk to each other on the street, you know, they might not even give a second glance. Here they are, you know, together encouraging on the same team, you know. I think that's kind of neat because it shows that they can be together, you know, they can work together. So I mean I can't help but like really like that. I do. I think that's great. I'm not into the Greek system, but you know, because that to me that's a small version of nations, you know. They're just picking out who's who and, you know, who can get into who, and very, how do you call it, one, you know, nationalistic kind of, you know, each house is better than the next house or something, you know, and only certain houses associate with each other. It was just look out.
Tell me about that.
Okay, I climb out to the tallest place, climb up the stairs of Olds Hall, and climb up there, and I just, when I get to the top, you can see everything. You can see how small the campus really is. You know, in one way you can see how small it can be compared to the rest of the world, and how problems here aren't going to be compared to the, you know, what's really out there. That's why I like to climb. I always like climb to the top of buildings or apartment buildings, even just something that's above most of the rest.